Hello, and welcome to this Microsoft TechNet session discussing why to deploy IPv6. My name is Valerie Lee. IPv4 has been around since the late 1970s, and in combination with network address translators, IPv4 has provided a good internet protocol solution until now. So why would you want to deploy IPv6? IPv6 is designed to solve many of the problems of the current version of IP, known as IPv4. We are going to discuss the limitations of IPv4, such as address depletion, security, auto-configuration, and extensibility. While providing a solution to these IPv4 limitations, IPv6 also introduces a new addressing structure. We will illustrate the possibilities with IPv6 address size and also show the new IPv6 header and address syntax. Subnetting provides many advantages to an organization, which can also be provided with IPv6 addresses. Not only does IPv6 address the problems with IPv4, its use will also expand the capabilities of the internet to enable a variety of valuable and exciting scenarios, including peer-to-peer and mobile applications. Microsoft is committed to integrating IPv6 support into its operating systems and applications to take full advantage of the new and improved capabilities it provides. Windows Vista and Windows Server Longhorn provide out-of-box support for both IPv4 and IPv6 in a dual IP layer. As we conclude today's session, we will show ways to manage IPv6 with Windows Vista. As we go through today's session, you will hear various Microsoft acronyms and terminology. While we will explain all new terms related to today's session, there are some general terms from the industry or other versions of Microsoft products we may not spend time on. To help you out, we have listed out the areas that it may be helpful to be familiar with, either prior to this session or to reference afterwards. An understanding of internet protocols, specifically TCP/IP, will assist you in understanding how IPv6 works. The address size in IPv6 is much larger than IPv4, in addition to a different header and structure. We are going to explain the new header and structure, but we aren't going to go into much detail of the IPv4 header and structure. So, for comparison, it would be helpful for you to have an understanding of IPv4 addresses. Finally, we will go over how to subnet your addresses with IPv6. However, we don't go into a detail of how subnetting works, especially with IPv4. To cover the topics mentioned on the earlier slide and keep the session flow going, we have divided the session up into the following agenda items. To begin today's session, we are going to highlight the shortcomings of IPv4 and then discuss how IPv6 provides solutions for these problems. We will also discuss the role of network address translators in the new Internet Protocol version. Next, we will illustrate the new header, address structure, and address syntax with IPv6. Then we will look at some transition technologies to assist with the migration to IPv6 networks. Finally, we will look at IPv6 scenarios and how IPv6 will benefit your company, especially in combination with Windows Vista. Microsoft has an integrated networks vision. This vision builds upon the internet as the network infrastructure backbone. Using TCP/IP as a routable enterprise networking protocol that supports the connection of your Microsoft Windows-based computer to both LAN and WAN environments provides a robust, scalable, cross-platform client-server framework. Most companies are already utilizing this technology, so the next concern is making sure the network can give you the necessary security, reliability, and throughput. As technology needs increase and companies grow, we need to look for new ways to secure and manage the network. Steps have been taken towards this goal by solutions such as server and domain isolation and network access protection. A server and domain isolation solution based on Microsoft Windows Internet Protocol Security, or IPsec, And the Active Directory directory service enables administrators to dynamically segment their Windows environment into more secure and isolated logical networks based on policy and without costly changes to their network infrastructure or applications. This creates an additional layer of policy-driven protection and helps better protect against costly network attacks, helps prevent unauthorized access to trusted networked resources, achieve regulatory compliance, and reduce operational costs. Network Access Protection, or NAP, is a policy enforcement platform built into the Microsoft Windows Vista and Windows Server Longhorn operating systems that allows you to better protect network assets by enforcing compliance with system health requirements. With Network Access Protection, you can create customized health policies to validate computer health before allowing access or communication, automatically update compliant computers to ensure ongoing compliance, and optionally confine non-compliant computers to a restricted network until they become compliant. In conjunction with focusing on network security, it has become necessary to look at the version of IP we use and address its limitations. The current version of IP has not been substantially changed since RFC 791 was published in 1981. IPv4 has proven to be robust, easily implemented, and interoperable, and has stood the test of scaling an inner network to a global utility the size of today's internet. This is a tribute to its initial design. However, things have changed dramatically over the last 28 years. In 1977, DARPANET, the Advanced Research Projects Agency Network of the U.S. Department of Defense, had 100 hosts. In January 2006, the Internet Systems Consortium, or ISC, estimated nearly 400 million hosts were on the Internet. IPv4 has a 32-bit address space that allows for a maximum of 4 billion addresses. From this number of addresses, we can conclude that the original design of IPv4 did not anticipate the recent exponential growth of the Internet. Because IPv4 addresses have become relatively scarce, some organizations have been forced to use network address translators, or NATs, to map multiple private addresses to a single public IP address. However, the rising prominence of Internet-connected devices and appliances ensures that the public IPv4 address space will eventually be depleted. The initial design of IPv4 also didn't account for the requirement for security at the Internet layer. Private communication over a public medium, such as the Internet, requires encryption services that protect the data being sent from being viewed or modified in transit. IPsec provides security for IPv4 packets, but this standard is optional. IPv4 also didn't anticipate the ability of Internet backbone routers to maintain large routing tables caused by the growth of the Internet. Because of the way that IPv4 network IDs have been and are currently allocated, the routing tables of Internet backbone routers routinely contain more than 85,000 routes. The routing infrastructure of the IPv4 Internet combines both flat and hierarchical routing. The growth of hosts on the Internet has been steadily growing. To help illustrate the growth of Internet hosts over the years, this graph shows the growth from less than a million in January 1992 to almost 400 million in January 2006. This growth has been happening exponentially over the years, with some straightening of the curve caused by advances, like NAT, to IPv4. While the path of the curve has changed slightly through the years, there hasn't been a lessening of hosts entering the network. As long as this growth continues, as it is expected to, it will be impossible not to run out of addresses in the future if we continue using IPv4. If you want to find out more information on this graph or history of Internet host growth, You can visit the Internet Systems Consortium website at www.isc.org. Significant work and diligence has extended the IPv4 address life through various policies and the use of NATs. In the early 1990s, the Internet Engineering Task Force, or IETF, which sets the standards for the Internet, understood the problems associated with the limited address space in IPv4 and began work to develop a newer version of IP. During this process, the IETF decided not to stop at fixing the issue with the address space, but also expanding the functionality of IP. The solution that was agreed upon was IPv6, and the core protocols were adopted as the new Internet Protocol in 1995. The U.S. Department of Defense and federal government have implemented major programs for adopting IPv6 and plan to begin using it in their operational networks by 2008. When you think of IPv6, you may think of countries such as Japan and China. However, the highest percentage of IPv6 addresses are assigned to Europe. This confirms that IPv6 is becoming a worldwide solution. Adoption of IPv6 has been slow over the past decade, but has recently accelerated, with several carriers and internet service providers implementing IPv6 in their networks, and companies such as Microsoft including operating system and application support for IPv6, the IPv6 adoption rate will greatly accelerate in the U.S. over the next 24 months. If IPv6 is a solution to replace IPv4 and technologies used to extend its capabilities, you may wonder what happens to NAT. Network Address Translation, or NAT, provides a method for translating the IPv4 addresses of computers on one network into IPv4 addresses of computers on a different network. A NAT-enabled IP router deployed at the boundary where a private network, such as a corporate network, meets a public network, such as the Internet, allows computers on the private network to access computers on the public network by providing this translation service. However, NAT introduces many issues, like the use of voice over IP. This is because NATs promote reuse of the private address space, but they do not support standard space network layer security or the correct mappings of all upper layer protocols. NATs can also create problems when they connect to organizations that use the private address space. While NAT does increase the security of your network, other features of IPv6 provide greater benefits without the extra problems. One of these new features is mandatory security. Although IPsec is available for IPv4, it is an add-on that has been primarily used for tunneling and network encryption for remote access virtual private networks, or VPNs, and connecting sites. Many organizations have begun exploring the use of IPsec on a wider basis, but obstacles, such as NAT, can make IPsec hard to deploy. With IPv6, IPsec is a mandatory part of the implementation and will provide for a common network layer security infrastructure, as well as security services such as authentication, integrity, and confidentiality to be used as needed. The inclusion of IPsec will allow businesses to improve their security model and extend their security policies down to the host level. Not only is the address size bigger with IPv6, it also has a different structure. Now that you have an understanding of the limitations of IPv4 and a general understanding of IPv6, let's go into more technical detail of addressing with IPv6. So, exactly how large is IPv6? The amount of addresses that IPv4 can provide is 2 to the 32nd power, which is slightly larger than 4 billion. With IPv6, there are 2 to the 128th power possible addresses. This is a really large number, 340 undecillion. As this illustrates, it is nearly incomprehensible how much larger IPv6 is over IPv4. Do we need all these IP addresses? Well, at one point, somebody said we don't need more than 640K of RAM. So today, we probably don't need this many numbers, but one day we may. IPv6 is designed to be an extensible platform. This means that as networks need change and grow, we can just upgrade IPv6 instead of changing protocols. Changing technologies can be difficult for an organization, so once you change to IPv6, you won't have to worry about changing to a different Internet Protocol version later. The relatively large size of the IPv6 address is designed to be subdivided into hierarchical routing domains that reflect the topology of the modern-day Internet. The use of 128 bits allows for multiple levels of hierarchy and flexibility in designing hierarchical addressing and routing that is currently lacking in the IPv4-based Internet. The increase in the globally routable address space will allow organizations to move away from using non-routable IP addresses with NAT and start again utilizing applications in a true end-to-end environment. It will also allow the explosion of IP-enabled wireless devices to continue, where every user will have multiple IP addresses and will increase the flexibility businesses and service providers have with developing and rolling out new services and applications. In addition to an increased address space, the header has been improved with IPv6. The IPv4 header is a variable length from 20 to 60 bytes. Some parts of the IPv4 header weren't fully implemented or replaced. These are areas such as the header checksum and additional options. A big improvement with the IPv6 header is that it has a fixed length of 40 bytes. The header has been simplified, with header overhead kept to a minimum. The IPv6 header has a new format that is designed to keep header overhead to a minimum. This is achieved by moving both non-essential fields and optional fields to extension headers that are placed after the IPv6 header. The streamlined IPv6 header is more efficiently processed at intermediate routers. While the IPv6 header has been greatly simplified when compared to IPv4, extension headers are used to provide advanced functionality required at the header level in the IP packet. Extension headers are simply incremental headers added to the base IPv6 header that provides great flexibility for future capabilities. This method for adding functionality at the header level allows the base header to remain constant and deterministic, while allowing new capabilities to be phased in over time. These extensions to the protocol can determine behavioral characteristics at the infrastructure and routing level, or at the application level, providing dynamic, policy-based networking and user-defined end-to-end services. Extension headers allow for future development of services and applications by providing a standard framework to add new capabilities into IPv6. Business and service providers will be able to utilize extension headers in the future to leverage capabilities not already existing in IPv6. IPv4 headers and IPv6 headers are not interoperable. IPv6 is not a superset of functionality that is backward compatible with IPv4. A host or router must use an implementation of both IPv4 and IPv6 in order to recognize and process both header formats. The new IPv6 header is only twice as large as the IPv4 header, even though IPv6 addresses are four times as large as IPv4 addresses. A unicast address identifies a single interface within the scope of the type of unicast address. With the appropriate unicast routing topology, packets addressed to a unicast address are delivered to a single interface. Global addresses are the equivalent to a public IPv4 address. They are globally routable and reachable on the IPv6 internet. Unlike the current IPv4-based internet, which is a mixture of both flat and hierarchical routing, the IPv6-based internet has been designed from its foundation to support efficient, hierarchical addressing and routing. The scope of a global unicast address is the entire IPv6 internet. Global unicast addresses contain four fields. The three high-order bits are set to 001. The address prefix for currently assigned global addresses is 2000::3. Next, the global routing prefix indicates the global routing prefix for a specific organization site. The combination of the three fixed bits and the 45-bit global routing prefix creates a 48-bit site prefix, which is assigned to an individual site of an organization. After this prefix is assigned, routers on the IPv6 internet forward IPv6 traffic matching the 48-bit prefix to the routers of the organization site. The subnet ID, which is 16 bits long, is used within an organization site to identify subnets. Finally, the interface ID indicates the interface on a specific subnet within the site and is 64 bits long. A link local addresses as an address scope of a single link. It is equivalent to a PIPA IPv4 addresses. With IPv4, when you turn on the computer, the IP address is 0, and the computer gets the IP address from a DHCP server. However, with IPv6, the link local address is self-configuring, meaning it will configure its own IP address that is valid on the subnet to which it is a member. So this means that a computer will not have to broadcast in order to get an address. Link local addresses are used for single subnet, routerless configurations, and for neighbor discovery process. Neighbor discovery is a series of 5 ICMPv6 messages that manage node-to-node communication on a link. Neighbor discovery replaces Address Resolution Protocol, or ARP, ICMPv4 router discovery, and the ICMPv4 redirect message. Link local addresses always begin with FE80. With the 64-bit interface identifier, the prefix for link local addresses is always FE80::64. An IPv6 router never forwards link local traffic beyond the link. A unique local address is private to an organization, yet unique across the sites of the organization. This type of address is used when you want the address available to everyone in the organization, but to no one outside the organization. If you have heard the name site local address, the unique local address is the replacement of the previous term in not only name but also functionality. It provides more access control and more efficient communication. The way that IP addresses are represented has also changed. Under IPv4, IP addresses were represented by 4 octets or 8-bit fields, 0 to 255, for each field written in standard decimal notation, separated by decimal points. Whereas with IPv6, IP addresses are typically represented by 16-bit fields, 0 to FFFF, for each field written in hexadecimal notation, separated by colons. An IPv6 address in binary form is divided along 16-bit boundaries. Each 16-bit block is then converted to hexadecimal format and delimited with colons. IPv6 representation can be further simplified by removing the leading zeros within each 16-bit block. However, each block must have at least a single digit. Some types of addresses contain long sequences of zeros. To further simplify the representation of IPv6 addresses, a contiguous sequence of 16-bit blocks set to 0 in the colon hexadecimal format can be compressed to :, known as double colon. Zero compression can only be used to compress a single contiguous series of 16-bit blocks expressed in colon hexadecimal notation. You cannot use zero compression to include part of a 16-bit block. To determine how many zero bits are represented by the colon colon, you can count the number of blocks in the compressed address. Subtract this number from 8 and then multiply the result by 16. Zero compression can only be used once in a given address. Otherwise, you could not determine the number of zero bits represented by each instance of colon colon. When reading an IPv6 unicast address, it is an 128-bit address in 8 16-bit blocks. The first four blocks identify the network segment or the subnet. The last four blocks identify the interface on the network segment. Subnetting with IPv6 is different than with IPv4. With IPv4, you can go from a large number of networks, like Class C at one end of the spectrum, at the other end, you have a few number of larger networks. This is because networks and hosts are in the same pool, and as you add more hosts, there are a fewer number of networks. With IPv6, the line can only go as far as the network line, which is a slant 45. All the way at the other end of the range is called slant 1. There is always 64 bits devoted to hosts and 64 bits to each network with IPv6. Therefore, there is no longer a variable subnet length. Instead, it is always 2 to the 64th power. Subnetting gives organizations a big advantage. For example, if a hacker is scanning for machines on your network, even if he can plug in, he will have a hard time locating the machine because the subnet is so large. Another instance where subnetting gives an advantage is with malware. If a machine is infected with a worm that is trying to infect other computers with port or IP scans, like the hacker, it will have a hard time finding machines on the large subnet. When applications are upgraded to IPv6, users will be able to automatically access those new features with IPv6 without having to do anything, since Windows Vista will utilize IPv6 by default. However, an administrator can also configure IPv6 with Windows Vista. In this demonstration, we will show how to ping other computers using local link addresses, and we will also show how to use other NetSH interface IPv6 commands. IPv6 is automatically installed and enabled on Windows Vista and Windows Server Longhorn. However, this computer is running Windows Server 2003, so we will need to install IPv6 before beginning these steps. IPv6 can be installed through the command line using the NetSH interface IPv6 install command. Once IPv6 has been successfully installed, we will be given an OK message. In this demonstration, the computers are configured so that only IPv4 traffic across the subnets is routed through an IPv4 routing infrastructure. However, we can still successfully ping neighboring link local addresses. Link local addresses, identified by the beginning address block FE80, are equivalent to APIPA IPv4 addresses auto-configured on computers running current Microsoft Windows operating systems using the 169.254.0.0/16 prefix. One of the most useful aspects of IPv6 is its ability to automatically configure itself without the use of stateful auto-configuration protocol, such as Dynamic Host Configuration Protocol for IPv6 or DHCPv6. By default, an IPv6 node configures a link local address for each interface. Link local addresses are used by nodes when communicating with neighboring nodes on the same link, a network segment bounded by routers. The scope of the link local address is the local link. An IPv6 router never forwards link local traffic beyond the link. So, from the information gathered from the ipconfig command, we are able to see that the local link address for our domain controller, SCADCO1, is FE80:203:FFFF:FE85:21F0. After the local link address, there is a percentage sign followed by another number. This number identifies the interface ID for this connection. In this example, that number is 5. The next step is to get the local link address of our workstation. We can do this using the same command, ipconfig. This workstation is running Windows Vista, so it will display the IPv6 address with the link local IPv6 address heading. Once we have taken note of this address, we can go back to our domain controller and try to ping this computer using the IPv6 address. When pinging another computer using the link local address, you must use the interface index of the sending interface. This is the ID5 we identified at the end of the IPv6 address on our domain controller. We will type the address of the workstation with the ID of the domain controller. A successful ping demonstrates that the workstation and domain controller are neighbors on the same link. The netsh commands for interface IPv6 provide a command line tool that you can use to query and configure IPv6 interfaces, addresses, caches, and routes. In addition, the interface IPv6 context of netsh has a subcontext for 6-4. You can use the commands in the netsh interface IPv6 6-4 context to configure or display the configuration of the 6-4 service on either a 6-4 host or 6-4 router. To configure a default gateway, you can use the netsh interface IPv6 add route command and add a default route, which uses the syntax ::\0. The interface is the connection or adapter's name or interface index. In this case, it is local area connection. As an IPv6 router, the publish option specifies whether the subnet prefix corresponding to the route will be included in router advertisements and whether the lifetimes for the prefixes are infinite. Among other settings, you can also specify the prefix length, the lifetime over which the route is valid, and the next hop. If the prefix is for destinations that are not on the local link, the next hop IPv6 address is that of a neighboring router. Once you have established routes, you can view the routing table. Every computer that runs IPv6 determines how to forward packets based on the contents of the IPv6 routing table. When forwarding IPv6 packets, the routing table is searched by your computer for an entry that is the most specific match to the destination IPv6 address. A route for the link local prefix is not displayed. The default route is typically used to forward an IPv6 packet to a default router on the local link. Because the router that corresponds to the default router contains information about the network prefixes of the other IPv6 subnets within the larger IPv6 inner network, it forwards the packets to other routers until it is eventually delivered to the destination. You can view information about the route, such as if it is published or not. We can see whether the route was created manually, which is the case for the route we created, Remember how the index for the connection is displayed at the end of the link local address? This index is also displayed for the route in the route table. The route that is displayed in the Gateway Interface Name area is a local area connection route we just created. With the NetSH interface IPv6, we can also enable IPv6 forwarding. This setting specifies whether packets arriving on this interface can be forwarded to other interfaces. The default is disabled. As with the route table, we can also view the interface configuration. The NetSH interface IPv6 show interface command displays the list of IPv6 interfaces, the interface index, interface metric, maximum transmission unit or MTU, state, and name. The NetSH interface IPv6 show address command displays IPv6 addresses assigned per interface, their address type, duplicate address detection, or DAD, state, preferred or depreciated, and valid and preferred lifetimes. Several other interfaces appear when we use the show address command. The Teredo tunneling pseudo interface is for Teredo, an IPv6 transition technology used for sending IPv4 encapsulated IPv6 packets across a network address translator, or NAT. The automatic tunneling pseudo interface is for ISATAP, an IPv6 transition technology used for sending IPv4 encapsulated IPv6 packets across an intranet. IPv6 neighbor discovery, or ND, is a set of messages and processes that determine relationships between neighboring nodes. ND replaces Address Resolution Protocol, or ARP, Internet Control Message Protocol, ICMP, Router Discovery, and ICMP Redirect, which are used in IPv4 and provide additional functionality. By typing the Show Neighbors command, we can view our neighbors. ND is used by hosts to discover neighboring routers and to discover addresses, address prefixes, and other configuration parameters. ND is used by routers to advertise their presence, host configuration parameters, and on-link prefixes, and to inform hosts of better next-hop addresses to forward packets for a specific destination. ND is used by nodes to both resolve the link layer address of a neighboring node to which an IPv6 packet is being forwarded, and to determine whether the link layer address of a neighboring node has changed. IPv6 has been around for a while, however, it hasn't been widely implemented until recently. To assist in implementing IPv6, there are several transition technologies available. Now that we have looked at how addressing works with IPv6, let's look at some technologies that can be used to smoothly transition to IPv6. To coexist with an IPv4 infrastructure and to provide an eventual transition to an IPv6-only infrastructure, there are three technologies that are used. The first is the dual IP layer. The dual IP layer is an implementation of the TCP/IP suite of protocols that includes both an IPv4 internet layer and an IPv6 internet layer. This is a method used by IPv6 IPv4 nodes so that communication with both IPv4 and IPv6 nodes can occur. A dual IP layer contains a single implementation of host-to-host layer protocols, such as TCP and UDP. All upper layer protocols in a dual IP layer implementation can communicate over IPv4, IPv6, or IPv6 tunneled in IPv4. The new TCP/IP stack in Windows Vista and Windows Server Longhorn utilizes this dual IP layer strategy. To assist in the coexistence of both IPv4 and IPv6, a domain name service, DNS, infrastructure is necessary. This is due to the common use of names as opposed to addresses to refer to network resources. Upgrading the DNS infrastructure consists of populating the DNS servers with records to support IPv6 name-to-address and address-to-name resolutions. After the addresses are obtained using a DNS name query, the sending node must select which addresses are used for communication. Computers running Windows Vista need to perform both A and AAAA queries to determine the best method of connectivity to the endpoint. By obtaining both IPv4 and IPv6 addresses, there is an increased chance of being able to access the desired endpoint if one of the addresses is unreachable. The DNS client service in Windows Vista has been designed to minimize the impact on DNS servers when performing DNS name queries. If the host has no global IPv6 addresses assigned, the DNS client service sends a single query for A records. If the host has at least one global IPv6 address assigned, the DNS client service sends a DNS query for A records and then a separate DNS query to the same DNS server for AAAA records. If an A record query times out or has an error other than name not found, the corresponding AAAA record query is not sent. The third type of transition technology is IPv6 over IPv4 tunneling. IPv6 over IPv4 tunneling is the encapsulation of IPv6 packets with an IPv4 header so that IPv6 packets can be sent over an IPv4 infrastructure. Within the IPv4 header, the IPv4 protocol field is set to 41 to indicate an encapsulated IPv6 packet, and the source and destination fields are set to IPv4 addresses of the tunnel endpoints. The tunnel endpoints are either manually configured as part of the tunnel interface or are automatically derived from the sending interface, the next hop address of the matching route, or the source and destination IPv6 addresses in the IPv6 header. There are several tunneling configurations used to tunnel IPv6 traffic between IPv6 IPv4 nodes over an IPv4 infrastructure. In the router-to-router tunneling configuration, two IPv6 IPv4 routers connect two IPv4 or IPv6 infrastructures over an IPv4 infrastructure. The tunnel endpoints span a logical link in the path between the source and destination. The IPv6 over IPv4 tunnel between the two routers acts as a single hop. Routes within each IPv4 or IPv6 infrastructure point to the IPv6 IPv4 router on the edge. For each IPv6 IPv4 router, there is a tunnel interface representing the IPv6 over IPv4 tunnel and routes that use the tunnel interface. In the host-to-router tunneling configuration, an IPv6 IPv4 node that resides within an IPv4 infrastructure creates an IPv6 over IPv4 tunnel to reach an IPv6 IPv4 router. The tunnel endpoints span the first segment of the path between the source and destination nodes. The IPv6 over IPv4 tunnel between the IPv6 IPv4 node and the IPv6 IPv4 router acts as a single hop. On the IPv6 IPv4 node, a tunnel interface representing the IPv6 over IPv4 tunnel is created, and a route is added using the tunnel interface. The IPv6 IPv4 node tunnels the IPv6 packet based on the matching route, the tunnel interface, and the next hop address of the IPv6 IPv4 router. The router to host tunneling configuration is similar, except the IPv6 IPv4 router creates an IPv6 over IPv4 tunnel across an IPv4 infrastructure to reach an IPv6 IPv4 node. In the host-to-host tunneling configuration, an IPv6 IPv4 node that resides within an IPv4 infrastructure creates an IPv6 over IPv4 tunnel to reach another IPv6 IPv4 node that resides within the same IPv4 infrastructure. The tunnel endpoints span the entire path between the source and destination nodes. The IPv6 over IPv4 tunnel between the IPv6 IPv4 nodes acts as a single hop. A configured tunnel requires manual configuration of tunnel endpoints. Typically, router-to-router tunneling configurations are manually configured. An automatic tunnel doesn't require manual configuration, and tunnel endpoints are determined by the use of logical tunnel interfaces, routes, and source and destination IPv6 addresses. Tunnel endpoints are determined by the use of logical tunnel interfaces, routes, and source and destination IPv6 addresses. The IPv6 protocol supports the following automatic tunneling technologies: 6-to-4, ISATAP, IPv6 automatic tunneling, 6-over-4, and Teredo. 6-to-4 is an address assignment and router-to-router automatic tunneling technology that is used to provide unicast IPv6 connectivity between IPv6 sites and hosts across the IPv4 internet. Intra-site automatic tunneling addressing protocol, or ISATAP, is an address assignment and host-to-host, host-to-router, and router-to-host automatic tunneling technology that is used to provide unicast IPv6 connectivity between IPv6 hosts across an IPv4 intranet. ISATAP hosts do not require any manual configuration and create ISATAP addresses using standard address auto-configuration mechanisms. By default, the IPv6 protocol automatically configures the link local ISATAP address on the automatic tunneling pseudo interface for each IPv4 address that is assigned to the node. We saw this in our last demonstration. IPv6 automatic tunneling is the tunneling that occurs when IPv4 compatible addresses are used. IPv6 automatic tunneling is a host-to-host tunnel between two IPv6 IPv4 hosts using IPv4 compatible addresses. 6-over-4, also known as IPv4 multicast tunneling, is a host-to-host, host-to-router, and router-to-host automatic tunneling technology that is used to provide unicast and multicast IPv6 connectivity between IPv6 nodes across an IPv4 intranet. 6-over-4 hosts use a valid 64-bit prefix for unicast addresses, and the interface identifier that is the colon hexadecimal representation of the IPv4 address assigned to the host. Teredo, also known as the IPv4 Network Address Translator, or NAT, transversal, NAT-T, for IPv6 provides address assignment and host-to-host automatic tunneling for unicast IPv6 connectivity across the IPv4 internet when IPv6 IPv4 hosts are located behind one or multiple IPv4 NATs. To traverse IPv4 NATs, IPv6 packets are sent as IPv4-based user datagram protocol or UDP messages. 6-to-4 provides a similar function as Teredo. However, 6-to-4 router support is required in the edge device that is connected to the internet. 6-to-4 router functionality is not widely supported by IPv4 NATs. Even if the NAT were 6-to-4 enabled, 6-to-4 would still not work for configurations in which there are multiple NATs between a site and the internet. Teredo resolves the issues of the lack of 6-to-4 functionality in modern-day NATs or multi-layered NAT configurations by tunneling IPv6 packets between the hosts within the sites. In contrast, 6-to-4 uses tunneling from the edge device. Tunneling from the hosts presents another issue for NATs. IPv4 encapsulated IPv6 packets are sent with the protocol field in the IPv4 header set to 41. Most NATs only translate TCP or UDP traffic and must either be manually configured to translate other protocols or have an installed NAT editor that handles the translation. Because protocol 41 translation is not a common feature of NATs, IPv4 encapsulated IPv6 traffic will not flow through typical NATs. Therefore, the IPv6 packet is encapsulated as an IPv4 UDP message, containing both IPv4 and UDP headers. UDP messages can be translated by most NATs and can traverse multiple layers of NATs. Teredo is designed as a last resort transition technology for IPv6 connectivity. If native IPv6 6-to-4 or ISA TAP connectivity is present between communicating nodes, Teredo is not used. As more IPv4 NATs are upgraded to support 6-to-4 and IPv6 connectivity becomes more widely used, Teredo will be phased out. Teredo is available for Windows Server 2003 Service Pack 1, but is disabled by default. In addition, Teredo is also available but disabled by default for Windows Server Longhorn, Windows XP with Service Pack 2, and Windows XP with Service Pack 1, and the Advanced Networking Pack for Windows XP. However, Teredo is available and enabled by default for Windows Vista. IPv6 provides many opportunities for growth and technological advancement in the future. Now that we have explored how addressing works with IPv6, let's look at some ways that IPv6 will benefit your organization. Let's begin with some scenarios where IPv6 could be used. Imagine driving down the road streaming songs from your home PC. Currently, the use of NAT at your house won't let this happen. But maybe with the use of IPv6 and the elimination of NATs, we could do this in the future. Say, an in-vehicle safety and security system calls your car to notify you that you will run out of gas in 3 miles and directs you to the nearest gas station. With an IPv6-enabled car, a subnet could be assigned to your car, allowing the service to monitor everything in your car and send you information. This may sound like it's something that won't happen for a long time. However, right now, taxi cars in Japan have an IPv6 sensor so that the main dispatch can monitor the car. For example, the dispatch can monitor if the windshield wipers are on. If all the taxi cabs in one area have their windshield wipers on, then it is most likely raining and more people are likely to get into a cab. So the dispatch would know to send more cabs to that area. IPv6-enabled appliances could allow remote diagnostics and repair, reducing maintenance and repair overhead. For example, you bring home a brand new plasma TV and it breaks down. You call to have it repaired and are told it would take 2 weeks to come out and fix it. But if the TV were IPv6-enabled, the technician could go through IPv6 connection to remotely connect and repair the TV or determine the problem and send you the part needed to repair the TV. Implementing IPv6 involves more than just how you assign IP addresses. Businesses will get increased benefits by not only upgrading the network infrastructure to IPv6, but also upgrading their applications. IPv6 is a platform that new solutions can be built upon. Applications are the key to IPv6 ROI. Therefore, organizations need to use IPv6-aware applications to address business pain points to streamline business processes. A great improvement in the overall support for IPv6 is the new WinFX API developed by Microsoft. The API includes many additional features that make developing peer-to-peer and other types of end-to-end applications that support IPv6 environments easier. Creating and deploying applications that utilize the functionality and structure of the WinFX API will be critical for both application developers and companies to stay in touch with the latest capabilities offered in Windows Vista. One of the most significant security issues organizations face today is a lack of protection on their internal networks. Most organizations establish security at network boundary locations and utilize tools such as firewalls and intrusion detection systems to implement their security policy. Unfortunately, this leaves the majority of their internal network open to malicious or accidental attacks from users or compromised devices from within their enterprise. Since IPsec is a mandatory part of IPv6, it provides developers, service providers, and enterprises with a ubiquitous security infrastructure to leverage in implementing their overall security solutions. The use of IPsec in conjunction with the server and domain isolation technologies deployed in Windows Vista will allow organizations to increase their security posture and provide a greater degree of protection for their critical IT resources. This will result in greater protection and reduce the overall IT costs by limiting the number of security incidents the IT staff will need to recover from. In addition to security, IPv6 allows the network architecture to become more simplified. The use of IPv6 functionality such as auto-configuration and neighbor discovery removes the need for manual configuration or the use of DHCP. This not only reduces the staffing required to manage the network, it also limits the opportunity for misconfigurations. Microsoft has taken great strides in implementing IPv6-capable operating systems and applications. One of the major issues with transitioning is that IPv6 is not backwards compatible with IPv4. That's a computer on the network operating with only IPv6 addresses cannot directly communicate with a computer on the network operating in IPv4 mode only. However, Windows Vista and Windows Server Longhorn have been developed to address this issue. Every computer running Windows Vista will be able to communicate across IPv4 and IPv6 networks at the same time. Windows Vista runs a single stack, dual IP layer architecture for easier deployment and manageability. This dual IP layer approach will allow organizations to save money and resources by transitioning their organization's infrastructure to IPv6 over time without worrying about interoperability issues with their workstations. IPv6 will be dominant in Windows Vista. What does this mean? If you have the option of using either IPv4 or IPv6 for a particular application, then Windows Vista will default to using IPv6. Again, this allows organizations to transition to IPv6 at their own pace, without costly reconfiguration of every workstation. When applications are upgraded to IPv6, users will be able to automatically access those new features with IPv6 without having to do anything, since Windows Vista will utilize IPv6 by default. However, an administrator can also configure IPv6 with Windows Vista. In this demonstration, we will look at some ways to manage networks with Windows Vista, including how to disable IPv6. The Network and Sharing Center is a single point of access for all of the most common networking and sharing tasks. Every aspect of networking, from installing to configuring to managing, which in the current Windows XP operating system requires that you use several different tools, can now all be done in the Network and Sharing Center. The network map shows the current computer passing through the local network to access the Internet. Just above the Internet icon, there is an option to view a full map. The full network map is a more comprehensive tool that displays the network in greater detail. We can view the network to which we are connected. In this case, we are connected to the domain network. Windows Vista gives the user more control over the look and feel of operating system features. For example, within the Network and Sharing Center, you have the option to personalize your network. The Customize feature gives you the ability to assign a meaningful name to the various wireless networks to which you connect. For example, if you were to connect to a friend's access point and the SSID for his wireless network is simply Linksys, you could instead assign a friendly name to the network, such as John's House. In addition to changing the name of the network, you can change the network icon. Maybe the network you are connecting to is at one of your favorite coffee shops. you could select the coffee mug icon to visually identify the network. Not only does this Network and Sharing Center show network details, you can also configure sharing settings. Network discovery affects whether other computers and devices on the network are visible from your computer, and whether other computers on the network can see your computer. It also affects whether you can access shared devices and files on other computers on the network, and whether people using other computers on the network can access shared devices and files on your computer. While providing network and sharing visibility, it also helps provide the right level of security and access to your computer, based on the network location of the networks to which you are connected. You can share files and folders in several different ways. The most common way to do this in Windows is to share them directly from your computer. Windows provides two methods for sharing files in this way. You can share files from any folder on your computer or from the public folder. Which method you use depends on where you want to store the shared folders, who you want to share them with, and how much control you want to have over the files. Either method allows you to share files or folders with someone using your computer or using another computer on the same network. With file sharing, you can decide who will be able to make changes to the files you share and what kinds of changes, if any, they can make to them. You do this by setting shared permissions. Sharing permissions can be granted to an individual or to a group of users on the same network. You can also use this method of sharing as a way to access your shared files when you are using another computer, since any files you share with other people are also visible to you from another computer. Enabling public file sharing allows you to copy or move files to your public folder and share them from that location. If you turn on file sharing for the public folder, anyone with a user account and password on your computer, as well as everyone on the network, will be able to see all the files in your public folder and subfolders. You cannot restrict people to just seeing some files in the public folder. However, you can set permissions that either restrict people from accessing the public folder altogether, or that restrict them from changing files or creating new ones. In addition to file sharing, you can allow others to share printers connected to your computer. When media sharing is on, people and devices on the network can access shared music, pictures, and videos on this computer, and this computer can find those types of shared files on the network. Also from the Network and Sharing Center, you can view other computers and devices on your network. For example, we can see our domain controller, SEADC01. By clicking SEADC01, we could view any shared folders on that computer. In order to see the new Windows Vista Networking Diagnostics tool in action, we are going to disable the network card. Again, this can be done in the central location, the Network and Sharing Center. Clicking the View Status link will display a status screen that provides you with information such as the connection speed, the connection's duration, and whether the connection is using IPv4 or IPv6. If you click the Properties button, Windows will provide you with detailed information regarding the computer's TCP/IP configuration. For now, we just want to disable the network card, so we will choose the Configuration option. We are disabling the network card to create a problem with the network. In the Network and Sharing Center, it now displays Not Connected. We have successfully created a network problem that will need to be resolved. The Network Diagnostics Framework is an extensible architecture that helps users recover from and troubleshoot problems with network connections. It will prompt the user through a series of options to eliminate possible causes until the root cause of the problem is identified or all possibilities are eliminated. Windows Vista works its way down a symptom tree structure to figure out what is wrong with the network connection. This is different from Windows XP, which used the general approach of tearing down the TCP/IP network stack and then rebuilding it from scratch. Windows Vista recognizes that the network adapter on this computer is disabled. Rather than providing instructions to enable the network adapter, Windows Vista will enable it for you. This process is meant to be user-friendly. By enabling the network adapter for the user, the Network Diagnostics Framework is designed to reduce help desk calls. After enabling the network adapter, the computer is again connected to the network, but is unable to connect to the internet. This is because we are running on a closed network. To help users get connected to the internet, the diagnostics tool provides the two most likely issues blocking access to the internet, with instructions on how to fix the problem. The Network Diagnostics Framework has now restored our network to the previous state. The Network and Sharing Center provides links to assist in network connections and management. If there were any wireless networks available, Windows would automatically detect them and you would be able to set up a connection with that network, assuming you have the correct permissions on that network. You have several options in order to set up a connection or network. You can connect to the internet, which will set up a wireless, broadband, or dial-up connection to the internet, or you can use a wizard to set up a connection to your workplace through a dial-up or VPN connection. If you have multiple computers in your home or business, you can set up a network to connect to them. The Setup a Connection or Network Wizard will guide us through the steps necessary to configure a wireless router or access point, set up file and printer sharing, save network settings, and get instructions for connecting other computers and devices to your network. In addition, the wizard will make this a private network. Depending on your network hardware, some of the options might not be available. Since we don't have a wireless network card available, we can choose an option that will create wireless settings that can be transferred to the router with the USB flash drive. You should only do this if you have a wireless router that supports USB flash drive configuration. When creating a network name, it is a good idea to choose a name that people who connect to your network will recognize. The network name can be up to 32 letters or numbers. As mentioned, this wizard will make the network private. To do this, Windows will use a passphrase you specify to generate a Wi-Fi protected access or WPA security key. WPA encrypts the information that is sent between computers on a wireless network and authenticates users to help ensure that only authorized people can access the network. Therefore, the first time that people connect to this network, they will need the passphrase. Next, we will set up file and printer sharing options. We will choose the option that will allow files in our public folder and shared printers to be accessible. At this point, you would save these settings to the USB flash drive and transfer them to the router, so we will stop the wizard since we don't have a flash drive. Managing networks is simple with Windows Vista. From the Network and Sharing Center, we can click on the Manage Networks Connections link. We are taken to a page that lists the associated network connections. The only connection we have is a local area connection, But if you had other connections, such as wireless connections, you could also manage those from here. In addition to managing IPv4 addresses from this dialog box, you can configure and manage IPv6 addresses. The Obtain an IPv6 address automatically option specifies the IPv6 addresses for this connection or adapter are automatically determined by stateful or stateless address auto-configuration. Although to automatically obtain an address is the default, you have the option to specify an IPv6 address. If you choose this option, you are specifying that the address and default gateway for this connection or adapter are manually configured. You enter the subnet prefix for this connection if you are manually entering an IPv6 address. For IPv6 unicast addresses, a space is provided for you to type the IPv6 unicast address for the default gateway. This value should be set to 64, its default value. The default selection means that the IPv6 addresses for DNS servers are automatically determined by stateful address auto-configuration. Once again, you can enter a preferred and alternate DNS server if you choose. From the General tab, you can click Advanced to access the Advanced TCP/IP Settings dialog box. This dialog box is similar to the Advanced TCP/IP Settings dialog box for the Internet Protocol version 4 component, except there is no WINS tab. This is because IPv6 does not use NetBIOS and the Windows Internet Name Service, or WINS. There also isn't an Options tab because TCP/IP filtering is only defined for IPv4 traffic. From the IP Settings tab, you can configure multiple IPv6 addresses and multiple default gateways. For each default gateway, you must specify the IPv6 address of the gateway and whether you want the metric for the default route associated with this default gateway to be manually specified or based on the speed of the connection or adapter, whether to use a specific metric for the routes associated with the configuration of IPv6 addresses or default gateways, or a metric determined by the speed of the connection or adapter. On the DNS tab, you can configure the IPv6 addresses of DNS servers in order of use. You can also configure the primary and connection-specific DNS suffix and name registration and devolution behavior. These settings are the same as for IPv4. Unlike Windows XP, IPv6 and Windows Vista cannot be uninstalled. To disable IPv6 on a specific connection, you can clear the checkbox next to the Internet Protocol version 6 component in the list under This Connection Uses the Following Items. This method disables IPv6 on your LAN interfaces and connections, but does not disable IPv6 on tunnel interfaces or the IPv6 loopback interface. Since Windows Vista is able to use IPv4 and IPv6 simultaneously, disabling IPv6 is not necessary unless you have a specific need in your organization to only use IPv4. When IPv4 was developed, it was a viable solution for the Internet at that time. However, growing networks and changing network needs have made it necessary for a new, improved Internet protocol. While NATs extended the scope of IPv4 addresses, they introduced other problems too. IPv6 has a larger address size and different structure to successfully eliminate these problems. In addition, IPv6 has been built to be an extensible platform that will make it so it is not necessary to change protocols in the future, only upgrade the existing version. While IPv6 is a great solution, applications need to be developed and used to take advantage of the IPv6 capabilities. Microsoft has made a commitment to providing this support, especially with the latest operating system release, Windows Vista. To get more information on the products and technologies we have covered today, we have some online resources available that can help. For the most comprehensive technical information on Microsoft products, visit the main TechNet website at www.microsoft.com/technet. Additionally, visit www.microsoft.com/technet/dsk-20 for more information on books, courses, certifications, and other community resources that relate directly to this particular session. There are a number of other resources that are available from Microsoft. Popular author and MVP William Stanek offers expert insights into this first look into the latest generation of Windows operating systems. Discover the new features and tools for deploying Windows Vista, help secure PCs and user accounts, migrate user settings and data, manage application compatibility, improve reliability, reduce support costs, develop applications, and help users achieve new levels of productivity and success at home or on the job. Introducing Microsoft Windows Vista is a guided preview for IT professionals, business decision makers, early adopters, users, developers, and anyone else who wants to start planning and hit the ground running with Windows Vista. There are also a number of good books available from other publishers. Here is the ultimate one-stop desk reference for Windows Vista users. Windows Vista, the complete reference, provides comprehensive coverage of the newest features of the operating system, from setting up for optimum performance and understanding the operating system, to finding files and keeping computer systems secure and free from spyware, this volume covers it all. It's the ideal resource for anyone who wants to truly master Windows Vista. There is also an assessment program available that can help you test your knowledge. Microsoft Skills Assessment is a free online learning tool. It's an easy way for IT professionals to check their skills. You can quickly check your skills in implementing or managing Microsoft products or business solutions. Just take a short 30-question assessment and see how well you know your stuff. The skills assessment includes a personalized learning plan, which includes links to Microsoft official curriculum, specific TechNet articles, Microsoft Pressbooks, and other Microsoft learning content. There's also a way to measure how well you did compared to others who took the same assessment. Microsoft Skills Assessment is an expanding learning platform. Available now are assessments for Windows Server 2003, including Security and Patch Management, Exchange Server 2003, Windows Storage Server, Office 2003, and Visual Studio.net. If you want to take your skills assessment to the next level, a number of certification programs are available. In the highly competitive IT job market, how can you set yourself apart from the next candidate? The Microsoft Certification Program provides that edge. Earning a specific accreditation provides objective validation of the ability to successfully perform critical IT functions. Embraced by industry professionals worldwide, Microsoft certification remains one of the most effective ways to reach long-term career goals, and is a surefire way for companies to develop and retain valuable IT staff. Several accreditations are available. Starting with the basic Microsoft Certified Professional, or MCP, you can become a fully certified System Administrator, or MCSA, System Engineer, MCSE, or Desktop Specialist, MCDST. Away from the infrastructure side, the MCDBA certification covers the SQL Server products. For more information about the certification program, visit www.microsoft.com/learning/MCP. This session was brought to you by TechNet. TechNet has gone through some changes recently, which you might find interesting. To help explain this in more detail, I'd like to introduce Ian Brackenberry, TechNet Subscriptions Product Manager, to cover these changes.
TechNet Plus subscription introduces its newest offering, TechNet Plus Direct. With TechNet Plus Direct, subscribers get all of the benefits of TechNet Plus for 30% less. Subscribers receive fast, easy access to the tools and information they need to get the most out of Microsoft solutions. A subscription provides IT professionals with immediate online access to all the essential technical resources they need to resolve technical issues faster, get hands-on experience with the latest Microsoft technologies, and build technical skills. Subscribers now get immediate access to all their subscription features in one convenient location, our new online benefits portal. Subscribers get access through subscriber download to Microsoft full version software for evaluation and beta releases without time or feature limits. No more waiting for media shipments. This includes Microsoft Server, client, and application software titles. With full version software, subscribers can make informed decisions about new technologies and deployments at their own pace. For the toughest technical questions, a TechNet Plus subscription also comes with two complimentary professional support incidents. Subscribers can talk to a Microsoft support professional to quickly resolve their mission-critical technical issues fast. TechNet Plus also provides access to over 100 managed newsgroups. Subscribers can exchange ideas with other professionals and get expert answers to their technical questions within the next business day, guaranteed. In addition, subscribers can also chat with a Microsoft Search Assistant online for help finding the technical resources they need or for assistance with non-technical questions. Subscribers also get access to technical information and tools, including the TechNet Plus library containing the knowledge base, security updates, service packs, resource kits, and more. TechNet Plus offers proven value that far exceeds its cost. The two complimentary professional support incidents alone more than offset the cost of a TechNet Plus subscription. Add to that the evaluation and beta software and other technical resources, and TechNet Plus clearly boosts productivity. Every IT professional on the team needs one. TechNet Plus is available exclusively online without media shipments. For more information, please visit technet.microsoft.com/subscriptions. There are a number of free community resources available on TechNet. You can attend a regular chat with members of the product groups or technology specialists from Microsoft, or you can attend a webcast where you can see sessions like the one you've just watched, but presented live and with the ability to ask questions as you go. You can also read or post questions in public news groups. The newsgroup page lists the available groups and provides an interface from which you can read and post messages. TechNet Plus subscribers can use these groups to post questions, and through their subscription ID, are guaranteed a response from Microsoft support professionals and IT experts by the next business day. The main community site provides a comprehensive list of resources available, more than we can cover on this slide, and the page has some dynamic features with continually updated content. The events page provides dates and details about attending a live TechNet event. These events take place around the world and provide the opportunity for you to talk to Microsoft specialists face-to-face. And finally, the TechNet columns provide a variety of topics written by industry authors. And with that, thank you for taking the time to listen to this TechNet session.